Hi gang, Donna here. Today I have the pleasure of interviewing Kawana Karadagi. Kawana had a journey and a dream. His dream was to do something more with his life. And somehow he discovered that he wanted to be an actor. So what does anybody that wants to be an actor do? You move out to LA. As he moved out to LA, he was there working, waiting on tables like most actors do. But he also started working out in the gym. And while he was there, he discovered something about himself. He discovered how much he loved working out and how it empowered him and how he eventually can empower others by becoming a trainer. His journey has some interesting twists and turns, and I hope you enjoy his story. Hi, Kawana, how you doing?
Hey, good. How's it going?
It's going okay. So you're here to talk to us a little bit about your Better Two moment, and your Better Two moment starts in Virginia. What was your life like in Virginia?
You know, that's a great question. Virginia was, a little bit slower for me, and it was really just, you know, suburban. So it was a little bit slower pace there. And I found myself drifting to, Washington, D.C. a lot. I went out in the nightlife. I liked the busyness of the city there. And that's kind of what happened. And at the same time, I had a lot of time on my hands, right? So, your environment's so interesting. But when I was there, I didn't really have much direction on what I wanted to do. So I was just kind of floating around, and, it caused me to be curious and rebellious in some ways that, wasn't the best for me, but, that's kind of how I learned. And eventually I moved to the West Coast from there.
And what part of the West Coast did you move to?
So I went to Los Angeles, and I lived there for about 10 years in LA, and then moved to San Diego, I want to say 2019.
So before the pandemic.
Yeah, right before. I had a good year, and it was a fun time. And then the pandemic hit, and it was like, wow, it was just, it changed everything, you know?
How much of a culture shock from Virginia to Los Angeles?
Oh, I mean, it was, at first it took me a while to kind of just, you know, get used to it, right? And then I think after a while, you just kind of, acclimate or adapt to it. But the first couple months even, I thought everybody there was an actor, right? So if someone was like, hey, I'm an accountant, I was like, what are you doing here? I was like, this is only entertainment, people that live in LA. I didn't know any better, right? And so it was a shock in the sense that I didn't really know how to or what to expect, really. And after a while, you just kind of got used to, okay, you know, everything stays open a little bit longer. There's always something going on, so that's cool. And then the variety of different walks of life was fascinating. So I learned a lot from all sorts of different people.
And when you moved to San Diego, how much of a culture shock was there?
I actually, when I got to San Diego, it was a little bit more of a slower pace than LA. And I actually appreciated that because I don't know if you've ever been there, but in LA, you pull out of a parking structure, you're checking your rearview mirror because somebody's flying behind you. And this is always, crowded on the streets there. So in San Diego, I was just so used to doing that. So I pulled down, I said, oh, wow, there's like no cars behind me. I can take my time on this turn a little bit more. And I feel like it's just a little bit more, I guess, quality of life's a little bit better, depending on where you live in LA. So, obviously if you're in Beverly Hills and or the Hollywood Hills, quality of life's probably pretty good. I wasn't in those areas. So, it was a little more interesting, but I wouldn't change it.
Well, and I mean, when I went out there, the one thing I did realize is like, I'm glad I wasn't driving stick at some of those stoplights. Oh, yeah, I mean, I've stopped on hills before, but some of those hills were just way too much.
Oh, yeah. I think the same thing. I purposely get automatic cars for that. First of all, I'm too lazy to do all that. So, but yeah, I totally feel you on that.
Yeah. So while you're out in LA, you said that, you had changed your life. You made a decision to change your life. And how did you do that?
I knew I wanted to do something I always had a sort of a drive to kind of want to achieve a little bit more and do things. And I guess I never really found that outlet. So for me, it was working out, and that kind of just led to a lifestyle change, so to speak. So I pursued things that, you know, in fitness that just kind of made me feel better. And that's the only thing I really chased. I liked the way I felt after that. And I just got hooked, right? So that changed my life, because in that pursuing of that feeling, I accumulated skills, and I just studied it nonstop. So I think it was just the chasing what excited me at the moment. And that's kind of what it was. I found working out, and then lo and behold, I became a personal trainer. Then I, you know, became a master trainer, management level, and then now own gyms, right? So, you know, my message is always follow the thing that gives you a little bit of excitement and joy, and you'll be surprised where it can take you.
Now, did you decide to start working out because of a weight issue, or was it because of your too much carrying on and partying? You wanted another way to get that high without getting, you know, inebriated or whatever?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's a mixture of the two, right? So I definitely had the fitness high that came with it. I loved that feeling because it was free. You had to pay for it a little bit, you know, and hard work. But the second part was I was kind of tired of doing things halfway, or being, you know, I want to say mediocre is kind of a negative connotation, but I didn't want to like just have this thing be a passive though. You know, I really wanted to be decent or good at it and achieve kind of some you know, proficiency in working out and kind of get to the how I want to look, right? I had a vision of the way I wanted to look, and I was like, I want that for myself. And I wanted to peel the layers back of things that were holding me back to do that. And I realized that a lot of it was just making a commitment. I thought to myself, if I committed to this, I was pretty sure that I could succeed at it.
So now that you've, you know, when you first went to the gym, was this like just, oh, I'm just going to join, it'll be no big deal, and then you started feeling really good about yourself? Or was it just as soon as you started working out, you're like, yeah, okay, I can do this, and I'm going to excel at it, and I'm going to create a career at it?
You know, that's actually a really good question, because when I did join, it was actually the opposite for me. I felt terrible in the gym. I looked around and I'll never forget. It was this moment where, you know, I'm sure people have been to gyms. It's, you walk in, you're a little intimidated. You know, I was a lot thinner then, and I'm still working on myself now, but then I kind of had this, you know, social physique anxiety or body dysmorphia image where I just didn't feel like I fit in. I hated that feeling. I saw these, you know, muscular, you know, guys and gals walking around. I thought, you know, what's the difference here? Why can't I do it? Or, you know, what is it going to take for me to get that? And, you know, once I think it clicked for me is once I realized that the work and nutrition component was tied together. I think that's when I was like, okay, it's up to me. I can do this. And it was a mixture of not feeling like I fit in, and that pain I channeled towards my effort into doing it. So I actually was, I felt like, you know, more driven when I felt that way. So I used it as fuel to kind of push myself forward. And whether it's imaginary or not, but I did see these muscular guys walk around. There was an air of confidence with them. And I thought, you know, I'm going to work harder, and I'm going to be like them or be better. And that's what drove me essentially.
Well, I imagine, okay, the normal gym is one thing, but a gym in Los Angeles, I imagine, is that much more stress, because everybody's trying to, especially if they're not, everybody's an actor, I know that, or a singer or whatever, but still the odds out there of looking good. I mean, that's what it's all about, isn't it? The California lifestyle.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So you nailed it there. The pressure's a little even more on for you. And you know, in LA, I guess there is the little bit of that where people are kind of checking you out and sizing you up a little bit, but welcoming nonetheless, if you kind of approach it in that open-minded way or fashion. But yeah, definitely a lot of that, especially if you're not, you know, a person that's been fit their whole life, you know, it can be going against the grain a little bit because you don't know where to start, you know? So I was lucky to have a mentor that we, you know, it was kind of like my buddy, and we went at it together, and I immediately had, you know, a partner in there. So it was important for the growth. And I think the finding that for people is key in any endeavor, is to find somebody that will buddy up with you and help you.
And I can't help but think about back to school and the Presidential Fitness Awards and how you were just like, you have to do all these things. Did you ever have that experience with the Presidential Fitness Award in gym class?
You had to do like
climb a rope and everything else. And it's like, you normally don't ever do any of this, but hey, we're going to see if you can.
Oh yeah. I you know, it's such a powerful moment, but I actually would skip gym class, you know, when I was in my younger years, because I hated the outfit. And it was always baggy on me. And then I couldn't do any much in there. So I like pull-ups that wasn't able to do. And that was kind of a starting point there. I was looking back, and I actually forgot about that until you just brought it up. But yeah, that didn't really click for me there. But I do remember the rope climbing, not being able to do that, and the pull-ups and all that hard stuff.
The most embarrassing moment, it wasn't me. I was holding the girl's legs. We were doing the Presidential Fitness Challenge, and she was doing her sit-ups, and it was after lunch. And yes, she farted. And I mean, of course, everybody's silent in the room, so it was very noticeable. And I started laughing, and she started laughing. It was just one of those things. I mean, it happens, but it happens. You just don't expect it. Anyway, now that I've digressed and really gone in the gutter here, so you ended up becoming a master trainer, which I'm sure took a lot of hours of training other people, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. It took me about, the number was 2,251 to become master. And then I ended, I still trained after, but I ended around 10,000 hours or so, was the end of the training, specific career. And then I continued to train and then moved on to more of the ownership side after.
Did you find it rewarding helping others?
You know, that's what I loved most about it. It was passing on what kind of I went through, and that personal transformation, so to speak. It was seeing the joy in people's eyes or feeling that, or the feeling they had when they achieved something for themselves. There was nothing quite like it. And I always try to connect back to that as kind of why I started. As I moved in management and even ownership, you tend to lose sight of, you know, what it is or why you kind of did it, because you're always moving forward, trying to move on. And it helped me sleep better at night, because all my life I always knew I wanted to do something like that, but I didn't know how. So fitness allowed me to pass that, you know, transfer that to somebody else. And that was the most rewarding part. So I lived for that. I loved results because that meant that it was working and people were getting there, and there was no fluff about it. Right. And that's what it was, graspable. That's what I really appreciated about fitness and other people's journeys.
What made you decide to become a gym owner?
You know, it's amazing, but I've answered just questions that were kind of put on me that have led me to where I am. And it just took, you know, my business partner, Dan, that I met at the gym I used to work at. And, you know, we would just sit around and talk. And I think great things can happen with people that you meet, you know, meeting people like yourself on podcasts. Even you just formulate ideas, and we just started talking about things and kind of where we wanted to end up in our life. And, you know, he had asked me, you know, where do you want to be in life? What do you want to make? And these type of questions. And I never really thought about that. So I said, I wanted to do these things. And he said, well, I think, you know, we should open a business is probably the way we're going to get there. And that was kind of it. We just started talking and meeting every day until we came up with ideas. And we went through about 20 bad ideas until we landed on what we knew best, right? Go figure. It was fitness.
Yeah. Yeah. So is that why you moved from LA? Because it was a better market to open a business in San Diego?
Mm-hmm, exactly. LA was, and still kind of is, I don't know what's going on now, maybe a little bit more availability, but it was tough to get locations there, you know, to meet kind of the things we were looking for, the lower rent. And we moved, and I still remember dreading the move because I didn't want to move out of LA because it was home at that point. But, you know, so many, as the cliche saying goes, the comfort zone, so many things come out of that. And I'm so glad that I did, because I learned so many things in moving out of Los Angeles to San Diego. So that was primarily the reason San Diego had better markets for it.
What did your family and friends say when you decided, okay, I'm moving from Virginia to California?
Oh, it was one of the toughest things, because all my friends were there, all my family was there, and it was hard. They supported me, but you know, it's tough leaving a network or people that you have known all your life. And at the same time, you know, I have to say it was probably one of the best things I did. I don't think I would have amounted to much or done much in my life, and if I didn't do that, I think I would have just been that guy that, you know, partied, smoked a pack a day and didn't do anything else. So as hard as it was completely worth it, because I was able to form, you know, new, you know, friend groups, peer groups, learn new skills, learn a new environment, which is a hack in and of itself.
Which is funny, because most people would say you moved out to Los Angeles for a better environment, and people would be like, yeah, you know, because people know that things happen out there, and, you know, so
yeah.
While you have this image of the clean LA, you also have the image of the party LA. So, you mm-hmm. know, it's kind of an interesting mm-hmm. dichotomy. So you also have a podcast currently too, correct?
Yeah. And just to touch on that, I think LA was good in the sense that it was one of the tougher places to live for me. And that's what kind of made me the man I am. I was kind of forged in there, you know, and I love LA for that. And that's because it forces you to kind of level up a little bit. And that's what I had to do, I guess, in my life. Right. But yeah, the podcast is called Valueverse, stories of, you know, work life. And basically I created it just to, you know, connect with, you know, people. I'd love to have you on as well. Thanks. One day if you're open to it, and just to kind of give back to the things that I've learned and learn from other influential experts in their fields.
So what did you do before you embarked on this journey as, you know, a gym owner? What did you do for a living?
You know, I started off trying to be an actor, believe it or not. And that didn't work out, because I think you and I both knew you would have known me or seen me on a movie by now. So, you know, the realization of finding out what fitness was through acting, essentially. So I, you know, I waited tables, and I was a busboy, a bar back. I was a bar back as my first job in LA. And that job alone taught me so much that I took from it to every career or job after. You know, it taught me the hard work. It taught me, you know, different systems and how to, like, you know, juggle things. And it really forced me to worry. My first shift was from 5 p.m. to 3 a.m. or 2 a.m., 2:30 a.m. And I got home and I was sprawled out on the floor, but it toughened me up in a sense. And then I became a busser, server, and then basically just worked in restaurants for about 7 years until I decided to take, about 4 or 5 years, excuse me. And then I continued to work for 7 years as I was a personal trainer.
And that's the thing. Sometimes we, you know, there's so many of us that want to be actors or musicians. And eventually we get to the point where it's like, we need security. We need something that's, you know, you can chase the dream. You can continue to chase the dream, but sometimes you need that stability.
That's right. And, you know, it also, the fitness provided the fulfillment for me that was scarce or harder to find in acting, unless you were in a production or on stage or, you know, involved in a project. You had days where it got kind of, you know, lonely and dark there, because you didn't kind of know what you were going to do. And that was tough for me, because I needed that purpose or that fulfillment to move forward and continue on and feel like I'm doing something productive or meaningful. And I think fitness allowed me to express that in a better way.
And it's a powerful thing. I mean, I know for a lot of people, fitness, going to the gym is a religious experience. You know, they're there every day, and some people it's not every day, but for some it's a religious experience. And now with COVID, you know, a lot of people, you know, there's something to ask you about is, so you opened this gym in 2019 and then COVID happens. How did that play out for you?
You know, that was tough, because we haven't even hit our year mark by that point. I think we were 11 months and of being open. And we got shut down there, and we had to, you know, basically have no moment to really do much. We had all this time on our hands, my business partners and I. And I always try to look for the silver lining in things that happen. And that's kind of where, you know, social media and the podcast was born from, believe it or not. Oh, I had all this time to not do anything. So I said, well, what am I going to do? I can just use this time to either sit around or I can do something productive with it. And I just, I wanted to reach people more. And I thought about the different ways I could do that. And podcasting was one of them. So I like to think that there was some good that came out of it, but it was tough in the beginning, because you had the time, you didn't know what to do. And it was easy to. Yeah. So, you know, we hadn't hit the year mark. And I had all this time on my hands. I didn't know kind of what to do with it. And that's when I try to look for the silver lining, where I said, okay, I can either, you know, sit around and not do anything, or I can do something productive. And that's when the podcast was kind of born from that. So I like to say that there was some good that came out of it, because it just allowed me time to create and be creative. And then we opened an outdoor gym, and we just had to sort of adapt with the times. And I think that's what it is about in business and life. You're always adapting to and changing your ways to kind of keep going with the flow. And that's kind of what happened. We built an outdoor gym, and we consistently, thought of new ways to just be more productive and add value.
And that's smart, because when you build something and all of a sudden it's, you know, dare I say, the carpet is ripped out from underneath you, you know? Mm-hmm. So now that things have kind of gone back to normal, is the gym back open as a regular gym, or are you still doing the outdoor thing?
We're back open, back to normal. And the outdoor gym got basically, we had to, you know, get rid of it. Our landlord was kind enough to keep it, to let us keep it until I think everything was allowed to reopen again. And then we had to kind of get rid of that. And it was a sad day, because it had a long run, and but it was also good, because it was on, you know, to the next step. So we're allowed to be open indoors, and it was good.
So where do you see the gym? I mean, do you see yourself owning more than one gym, or is this going to be just this one facility? And are you planning on doing a franchise or chain?
Yeah. So basically it's Anytime Fitness, and we bought into the franchise model, and then we own three locations as well. So it's three gyms currently, and then we're expanding to hopefully four and five, either by the end of this year or early 2022.
So since training was so rewarding, do you still train anybody, or you just kind of go there and check out what you're doing and say, okay, yeah, I've done this, and people are.
Yeah, it's, you know, I was doing it when we opened and a little bit after for a while, for about, I want to say, close to the year mark. And it got to, you know, I always love it, but it did get to the point where I couldn't be away for that long anymore. And there was there was just too much happening for me to block out those hours like that for each person. So I had to kind of step away from that role. And so currently, no, I don't do the training one-on-one, but trying to rather cover more of a larger base, if you will, you know, with different ways of doing that.
So I, part of your introduction on your bio and stuff, it says, you know, you talk about self-care. So what do you recommend for self-care?
You know, I think finding something that you enjoy doing and slows you down a little bit. For me, you know, I meditate daily. I try to have social gatherings at least once or twice a week, and then spend time in nature. So just going out into, you know, a nice hike, you know, or surf, go into the water a little bit. That kind of, you know, anything away from the day to day, and just that allows you to kind of unplug and unwind, what helps, and just things that kind of allow your mind and body and I guess spirit to come to a little bit of a slowdown, is the best way to describe it. I think that in its self-care, just allows you to just be a better person for the people around you, to, you know, work more efficiently, more productively, and it's good for your stress levels.
Do you ever think back to that, the guy you were in Virginia, and look at where you are now and go, did you even imagine that this is where your life would be?
You know, not at all. I couldn't foresee that. And I look back on that, that guy, and I see someone that just needed a little more knowledge. The heart was in the right place, and it's really the information that you take in. And that's kind of what it was for me. The more information I knew, the more possibilities I understood or could conceptualize. So I look back and no way, you know, it always spoke to me, the feeling of self-improvement. I used to watch Rocky films a lot, and I loved that story. Mm-hmm. Of this person or this, you know, character that goes through this journey or this transformation. And that's kind of, I realized later on what it was all about. It was about going through that personal transformation, and everybody goes through it in their own way. You don't have to be a boxer, but you can be someone that goes through their own transformation and works on themselves and discovers that next version, you know, of being your own, I guess, champion.
And that's the thing. A lot of us aren't our own champions. We take a lot of negative self-talk that we grew up with, and we compound that daily. And you know, we get the comment of you're your own worst critic.
100%. I was listening to a podcast yesterday, and on Anne Lamont, who's a writer, and she says, you know, the perfection is the voice of oppression, right? You know, it's never going to really go away, and that critic will always kind of be there, and you just have to kind of learn how to turn it off and not let it overtake kind of that creative process. Because I thinking back, I had so many things I wanted to do, but I realized it was the only person that really stopped me was myself, you know? And I thought, well, how did that get there? And so I had to kind of undo a lot of things and try and figure that out. So I completely agree. The inner critic is something that can definitely be a detriment.
I think, you know, part of it, I think, is also, dare I say, kind of addiction, because you know, like any addiction, it comes back and you're triggered and you connect with it again and you go through that same cycle. And I think the inner critic, when we're at our worst and we start beating ourselves up, it's that addiction coming back in and taking hold. You know, we don't want to beat ourselves up. We know we're better than that, but the voices of the past sometimes come back and resonate with who you are currently. Because of a situation.
That's right. You know, the triggers are definitely always there. And it's also so familiar. It's also, mm-hmm. You know, I guess the mind, it's easier for that neural pathway or whatever it is to connect back to that, because it's more familiar, it's more easier. And, you know, it's just your default setting, I guess, right? So it really takes you know, effort. And I think that the best way is happiness is a muscle. You know, you gotta train it, and you have to find ways to strengthen it more than the other voice. And, you know, one of the things I try to do first thing I wake up is I say, you know, thank you to the universe, or to, you know, the powers that be, that I'm alive today. And I immediately start to feel in a place of more, you know, just better vibration and energy. So it really takes daily effort to do so, to love yourself. And you know, it's a hard thing to do, but I don't think we're ever taught or if that's the right way to say it. But you know,
I think, you know, two things there. That's why I think, you know, the negative self-talk is the addiction, because we're so used to it. And secondly, if you know, depending on what generation you are, I mean, my generation, and I think a little bit of the younger generation, not real young, but we were taught that if you loved yourself, if you thought you were pretty, or if you thought you were egotistical, you know, you were egotistical, you were high on yourself. It was not something that was rewarded if you liked yourself.
That's a good point.
And I think that's a lot of where this stems from, is because, you know, you couldn't say how good you were because somebody would think, oh, well, look at you. Who do you think you are? You know, and it's like, well, so.
Right. And I think, you know, that being it's very important. You didn't want to be that person, right, in the room that thought of themselves that way. And I think you're absolutely right. It's something that it's vilified a little bit, in the fact that we're not supposed to do that. And what I've learned through that, you know, process is that the only way to kind of be a leader or be somebody for others is to do that for yourself, so you can give back. You know, I think I read in a leadership book, John Maxwell, you know, he said that trees can only give off you know, the amount of fruit that it can give off if the tree is strong in itself to be able to give back. And human beings are the same way. We're only able to do that if we grow and we give back to others. And that's where that kind of makes more sense. And in the fact that in order to fill other people's cup, you got to fill yours, right?
Yeah. So do you, I know with the fitness, it's one thing for the physical, but do you try to, when you were a trainer, were you trying to get your clients also to take part in the mental as well?
You know, then it was tough for me because I was very primitive in my training. I would, you know, focus on a couple things, which was listening to the client's goals, needs, and then applying kind of, you know, what worked for them. And I worked more on tools than I did, I guess, the mindset component, which I focused mainly on the vision of where they wanted to go and what those steps look like, I guess. So now I see it a lot differently and as a whole to be, you know, inclusive of all of those. So it was interesting for me then, but I looked at it more of, okay, this is our plan and this is what we're going to do. If these shortcomings happen, this is our plan to also get past these. So I was more of a strategic minded, navigator rather than focusing on the mindset. Cause you know, I got to the point where I would only take clients that were that were invested in that. And that was kind of a given, and we had that already. And then it was a win-win situation, because then I was the navigator and they were, you know, the person next to me there to basically, I was helping guide them, right? So without that portion, it was hard for us to get there. And when I worked with clients, I selectively chose the ones that were driven in that sense.
So did you have any clients that were like a major transformation, that went through a major transformation?
I did. I had, you know, 70-pound loss clients, you know, anywhere up to 70, so 50, 30 pound. I had, you know, guys and gals put on muscle. You know, there was younger, you know, kids that hadn't worked out and that were very, you know, out of shape. So getting them in shape was super fun. And, you know, even elderly clients that had hip and knee replacements that, you know, believe it or not, couldn't get off the ground. And, you know, getting that person to actually come and stand up from the ground was one of the most rewarding things ever, because they weren't able to do that themselves. So training and doing it and learning it was very rewarding. So I like those, and I don't know, it's hard for me to choose, but I think all of them were great, you know, successes in their own right.
So you've shifted your perspective a lot in your career. And do you still find yourself with your perspective shifting now?
Oh, 100%. I think, you know, I'm writing a book on it, but one of the things that I talk about is perspective. You know, so many times in life, we're trying to figure things out, but we're looking at it the wrong way, right? And I was kind of guilty of that so many years of my life. And I noticed, you know, with meditation that I did, that my perspective, it allowed me to widen my perspective and to look at things differently. So, you know, it's constantly shifting. Business made me, abruptly shift it, because I tried translating what I knew from being a trainer to business, and that didn't translate so well on different things like ideation topics, creativity, because in training, things are kind of set for you, right? You have your exercises, you have nutrition, and you follow these different principles in there. So in the essence of carrying some of the principles over, some did translate, but I had to change the way I thought, processed information so that I could see things differently and better. So I think business helped push me to that. And now marrying the kind of the business life perspective is kind of what I'm trying to help others do, and to realize what that is for themselves. So I think that's just a never-ending journey, is shifting that perspective.
So are you teaching others how to become their own boss?
You know, in essence, I would say that's the way to put it. I think doing that for yourself is kind of the best thing you can do. Is taking, you know, life in kind of your own hands, and realizing that you can undergo the transformation that you want and live the life that you want. Starting off as easy as, you know, like I did, put on some running shoes and go out there. But the main important thing is to start and to change whatever it is that you're doing to something that you is going to benefit you to becoming who you want to be on the other side. And, you know, whatever that is for everybody, the truths of them never change. It's always your environment, your habits, and, you know, your friends, right, as some examples. And I think helping others see that for themselves and find their own path is the way. I can't tell everybody to do it my way, but I can show you the things that can lead there.
I think that the pandemic has kind of forced people to reevaluate a lot of things in their lives.
Oh yeah. It's it exposed and brought out so many different things about ourselves and myself, especially. It made me look at things so differently in business, and, you know, now everything's shifting to more, you know, working from home, and businesses have had to adapt from that. And, you know, even relationships, I can imagine. And it's just, it's been a part of history that have, you know, hopefully for the better, made us stronger as a society.
I hope so. But I think it's also created some tension too, because now some people don't seem to know how to, dare I say, act civilized in public.
Right. Yeah, that's for sure. It's very interesting. You just see all the different mindsets of what's happening behind it. And you're kind of like, okay, what is going on here? And I guess you just really see the psychology and philosophy of people.
I mean, is it because you've been locked up for a few months? I mean, granted, lockdown has been off for a little bit, but is it you're acting badly because you feel you have no outlet, you were locked up, so now you're just going to lash out? The thing is,
yeah, you know, it's interesting.
The thing is, don't you realize that everybody's got one of these now?
that's right. And I think it is. It just had a number on it did a number rather on all of our mental health, I guess, and health in general. And I guess people, you know, everybody reacts in their own ways, I guess. And I've always been more of an observer. Mm-hmm. So, and I was fortunate enough to look like an idiot a lot when I was younger. So I tried to learn not to be like that. And so I always ask a lot of questions before I put all my chips in on one thing. And I've seen some funny stuff out there.
Yeah. I mean, I have a placard. I have a placard. This is way before COVID ever happened. I have a placard and I had it in my window. And this woman, I was pumping gas. So I'm here and she's like, a pump over here, decides to come over and tell me I should not be driving with that placard hanging in my window.
Hmm.
No reason. Just she felt the need to come tell me this. Mind you, everybody else does it. And she is in the middle of the gas station, like, you're not supposed to be driving with this. Okay, get back in your car. Just mind your own business. Get back in your car. Well, you're not supposed to get back in your car. I mean, I don't know why she did it. I don't know. There was no reason. I was going less than two blocks. So I'm like, why bother taking it down? If right. I get the ticket, I get the ticket. But she took it upon herself. And I mean, that's nothing really compared to some of the way other people are acting now.
Oh, you know, there never fails to be someone is ready to give you some advice, right? So you can go out there and like I always tell my friends, I said, you want to go out and stand in the middle of a gym and you're going to hear everybody's stories and everyone's going to tell you something. So, you know, I've learned to, you know, nod and smile a lot and kind of take things as a grain of salt and just kind of try to really understand where this person is trying to come from. Like, why does this person feel compelled to tell me this? And I think when I dive into that, I realize I'm like, you know, this is coming from a very interesting place where this person has either undergone. And I think I just need to kind of provide a listening ear right now so that this person can get it out. And that doesn't mean I have to listen to what she's saying and do it. But I'm going to, you know, just say, hey, thanks. Thanks a lot for your song. And, you know, I appreciate it. And I'm going to move on. Take care. You know,
if she would have approached me very nicely, like, you know, by the way, you really shouldn't. She came out aggressively right off the bat. And I was just like, how do you, you know, if I would have responded back with something nice, she would have been just back at me. So I was just like, just go.
You know, you attract more,
flies with honey.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Thank you. Yeah. Rather than vinegar. Right.
Yeah.
I was walking in, and this is why I love Los Angeles. Before I knew sidewalk rules, I was walking on the left-hand side of the sidewalk and this guy was walking towards me and he was walking on the right because he was, you know, walking the opposite direction than I was. And he was oncoming to me and he was walking by, you know, very nonchalantly. And I was walking towards him and I didn't move. And he kind of just moved a little bit to the side, but he really under his breath and in a nice way, he said, "Do you drive on the right side of the road too?" And he, you know, really quietly. And yeah. So I heard it in the background and I just kept walking until it was about, you know, 50 feet. And I realized, I said, "Oh man, this guy was talking smack to you, man." I kind of clicked for me and I was like, but wait a second, you know, what does he mean by that? And I learned something. I said, well, you need to walk on the right side of the sidewalk, you know, don't walk on, you know, to oncoming traffic there. So there's a way to do it. It's just, you know, it's all in the presentation.
I mean, even though that was talking smack, he did it without confronting you.
That's right.
And you learned something where hers was just more of a confrontation thing. Like, did somebody, dare I say this really badly, piss on your cornflakes this morning? Is that what this is about?
Sometimes most of the time that's what it is. Mm-hmm. And they just say, you know what, I'm going to go after this person here. And you just have to, you know, I've just learned to kind of, you know, bob and weave things. You know, working in restaurants really helped me with that. You know, it was all day, mm-hmm. And you just, you built a thick skin because you were like, you know, these people, it's not going to stop. And either I have to adapt or I got to just like quit. Right. So I said, well, you know, I just learned to sort of be, you know, bob and weave and be like water, as Bruce Lee says, you know, take a formless shape and don't let them hit you.
You know? And you have to, and in the restaurant industry, you have to go with the flow there's because you never know what's coming at you. You never know.
That's right.
So, and when you think about it, that's really an interesting world because you're in the restaurant world and then you're in the gym world. So, I mean, that's a very different vibe in both.
Oh yeah. It was, you know, when I wore, we had a joke. It was, I wore an apron during restaurant hours of the shifts that I worked. And I basically would work doubles where I would work as a trainer, a personal trainer, and I would work as this, you know, server. And when I wore the master trainer t-shirt, you would get all sorts of, you know, adoration and, you know, nods and handshakes and recognition. But then when you wore an apron, it was people were barking orders at me and then telling me what to do all day. So I thought how interesting it was that two pieces of garments can dictate, you know, kind of how you get treated, right? And it's interesting to know it that way, but it taught me a lesson that I guess you kind of, you know, you determine your value based upon kind of how you see yourself and what you do for yourself, right? That allows others to, I guess, see who you are, right? And it was fascinating to me that the psychology behind that, how people looked at me differently. And I thought, you know, that was kind of what it was. You know, it goes back to something I learned when I first started reading personal development books was, you know, a bellboy, you know, opens doors and a doctor opens the doors to life. So yeah, the doors of life, opening the doors from the bellboy and opening the doors of life from a doctor, it was what you invested in yourself allowed you to be a person of, I guess, higher value, you know. Oh. And that was what I found.
It's kind of like the labels. I mean, if you know, when you think about it, when you're talking about the outfit, the chef's outfit, you're going to get a little bit more respect because you're the chef. You're not the low man on the totem pole. And I think that's with a lot of things in life. You just have these different labels and different hats and different roles. And unfortunately, we put people in those categories.
We put them in those categories. And then, you know, it goes to show you that in today's, I guess, world, it's, even though I was that person with the apron on, I had a wealth of other knowledge that I was, that I knew about. But it's people, I guess, don't see that on the perception, right? They see what they're looking at. And it goes back to kind of, it's not what you know, it's what you can do with what you know. And that was the thing that was a game changer, you know?
It says, you talk reinventing yourself in business, marketing, team development, leadership. So are you helping people with sales and their strengths and all those things?
You know, it's more on now, it's kind of like the thinking and the mindset of it all and trying to get people in the position to do that and to want to be, want to do more, want to be better. And I think that's the first step. It all starts in the mind, you know?
Mind is a very powerful thing. Mm-hmm. Very powerful thing. So what do you see yourself doing in about 10 years?
You know, in 10 years, man, if I'm lucky enough to get there, I'm going to say, I hope that I'm in a position to have a bigger impact and do more for people in terms of being able to become better versions of themselves. And I think, you know, in a form of education or learning is the way I'll be doing that, and with physical exercise.
Awesome. So obviously your better two moment was that it was a positive thing to move from Virginia to California. It was life-changing, wasn't it?
It completely changed the entire, my whole life was changed because of that single decision. I would say that was definitely the better two moment.
And you're succeeding. I mean, that's something you have to be proud of, that you pursued something. Granted, you didn't become the actor, but you got something better, didn't you?
You know, that's a great way to look at it. And that's right. I guess we're all actors in some, in our own stories. And I found something that gave me the ability to sleep a little bit easier. And I think that is the most important thing, is that at least you helped one person. If you helped one person, then it's all good.
Go ahead.
And I think I can hang my hat on that.
And isn't that partially why you do your podcast too?
That's right. I think that's the most important thing. And, when I have grand visions, I want to, reach a million people and do all these things. And I'm like, let's start off with one. And I think that's kind of what I aim for, is can I get one person to see the value in this and to bring them into their own action.
Yeah. Well, I thank you very much for being part of the podcast.
Donna, thank you so much for having me. I love the show, and definitely going to binge listen. And thank you for having me on.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks, guys, for tuning in to the Better Two podcast. Your listenership is greatly appreciated. If you like what you hear, remember to hit subscribe. We also have our videos on YouTube. They're usually posted the same day as the podcast, and you should check it out. If you have a question or you would like to be a guest on the show, please drop me an email, and I'll be glad to talk to you about it. The email is Donna, D-A-U-N-A, @thebetter2podcast.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and catch you next time.